You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, Paul.
Robert Wright, how are you doing today?
None other than, and you're Paul Bloom. Let me introduce us. I am, as you just said, Robert Wright, publisher of Non-Zero Newsletter. This is the Non-Zero Podcast. You're Paul Bloom, famous globetrotting psychologist, currently located in Canada, although on any given day, who knows where you will be found. Now, Paul, also, your Substack is in the small potatoes genre. In fact, the name of it is Small Potatoes. Is that right?
It is.
And, Paul, I was all set to talk about Moltbook, and we will. Moltbook is the big story of the day, but
the question of where I am to be found and where you are to be found.
Oh, my God. Good segue. Large. This is the reason we're not going to start with Moltbook, is because you told me this thing right before we recorded. Now, take it away. Where are we to be found, Paul Bloom?
In the Epstein files.
Both of us. You and I. And I don't yet know the context.
I know. You
I
told me.
You
told me
to any tell association you with him?
Yeah, well, that's not what the underage woman says.
That's not what the files
says.
Say.
Yeah.
That's not what the Epstein files say.
No, so...
Bring it on. But, come on.
I was in a conference at Stanford over the weekend, which was a wonderful conference. And then and during this conference, I got dinged. A friend of mine said, "We're in the Epstein files," and so she said, and we were, but I was in a very benign way. There was a conference I was at, and then the conference was Epstein. Was it, somebody told Epstein there was a conference with great people, and there was a list of people, and me and her were on it. Another friend of mine was there. And I went up to him and whispered in the ear, "You're in the files, you're in the Epstein files." And he didn't look happy at all. But it was totally benign. You, on the other hand, are in the Epstein files. I just typed in your name, but it pops up.
Hey, let me just, before you get into this, you tell me, somebody walks up to you and says, "Do you want a free trip to the island?" What do you say? No? It's an island.
Who would say no to an island?
Who would say no to it? No, I didn't go to the island. What did I do, Paul? I genuinely don't know. This is going to be news to me. In what capacity?
You were a case of mistaken identity. So I think that's...
Well, if ever I have wanted to be a case of mistaken identity...
I don't have this in front of me. So I typed in your name, and I go, "Who knows what?" Like, oh my God. Because, you know, we were talking about this, and we should save this for overtime, but I feel left out. A lot of people I know, friends of mine, enemies of mine, are in the files one way or another. Jeffrey Epstein he's a people person. He's a people person. He knows everybody.
Anyway. That's a nice way to describe him. He was a people person.
He was a people person. So you were there where somebody emails Epstein and says, you were booked to talk to Robert Wright on Monday, when you arrive in Boston or New York or something. So, and he is, you know, he's a really engaging person. I think he'd be perfect for this job we have and so on. And so as you sort of talk about, you were booked to meet Robert, I was like, wow, my friend Robert Wright wants to appeal to Jeff, and somehow never mentioned it to me. And then Epstein responds, says, "I have no idea who you're talking about. I don't know Robert Wright. What are you talking
that
about?
Dick.
And then
wait a second, let me be clear. First of all, they're not actually talking about me, right? There's another Robert Wright.
No, she responds that, "Oh no, I meant somebody else." And it's like it's like Brian.
The guy who used to be head of NBC, that guy?
It's not you. It's not you. For a second, I was really...
This is kind of a letdown, Paul. When you know, you had told me I was in the Epstein files.
Your name was in the Epstein files, but
that's not the way you put it, Paul.
Well, be careful what you wish for. This could have gone very badly. I mean, when I first saw this, I'm saying, you know, my reputation at stake a little bit here, too. I've been talking to you for a while. Anyway.
You actually are in the Epstein files.
I am. I am just listed as a bunch of scholars doing this. But there are people. There's one person we both know who, when Epstein got arrested the second time, wrote him a really sweet letter of condolence. There's one person we both know, and we're not going to say this person's name.
Don't bet on it.
Who asked Epstein if he could have the number of this redhead that they had met with.
I know who you mean, and I'm not going to say that name because I already feel so sorry for that person.
We are not going to pile on, but that is, you know, I don't know. I talked to like seven people in my life. This is but he is a who's yeah. You type in like Noam Chomsky. There are 7,800 things.
Well, both of them had an interest in language.
It's true. There's yeah, and apparently he. I mean, I think there's a lot of things here. I think Epstein is personally charming, but I think that probably the key thing here, the magic bullet, the key to success is have an enormous amount of money that you're willing to throw at people.
And so, I think it's a little more than that. I mean, I think he was actually, a very capable operator, whatever exactly his operation was. I guess we are going to talk about Epstein for a while before turning to Moltbook, even though that's a more pressing, in the long run.
I've said all I have to say. I am in the files. Gives me a little freeze really of excitement. Files. Yeah.
And you really let me down. You had told me I was in the files.
Your name was in it. Yeah.
So, actually the, here's an example of where, what an operator I think he was. And I think this is kind of being misunderstood. So the whole Elon Musk thing is interesting because, for one thing, Elon Musk had previously said, they tried to get me to that island, but I refused. And then in these files, there's all these, times when apparently, Elon was certainly game. It just didn't quite happen. And in one of them, this definitely doesn't sound like refusal. Elon asks in a 2012 message, quote, what day night will be the wildest party on your island? Okay. That doesn't sound like refusal to me. I don't know. No. Anyway.
There's this back and forth where Epstein says something like, come to New York and you'll meet with representatives from the United Nations who are involved in it. And Elon Musk is like, I'm very busy. And that is not my kind of thing. And then Epstein says, I'm just kidding. There'd just be a bunch of women under 25.
Yeah, here's the exact thing, I think. So Epstein says, any plans for New York? The opening of the General Assembly has many interesting people coming to the House. I actually think this is being misunderstood, by the way. Jeet here take is that Musk is misunderstanding the nature of a party Epstein's throwing. But if you actually read the sequence of events, I think this is probably the kind of thing that made Epstein very good at building a network of influential people. I think actually the offer is open-ended. He's not talking about a specific party. He's saying there could be some interesting people. And I think at that point he is hoping Musk will say, well, who from the UN can you line up or something? And look, Jeffrey Epstein could line up some people. Anyway, in response to that, Musk says, I run and lead product design engineering for two complicated companies. Moreover, SpaceX is about to launch what is arguably the most advanced rocket in history. Flying to New York to see UN diplomats do nothing would be an unwise use of time. And then Epstein replies, quote, do you think I am retarded? Just kidding. There is no one over 25 and all very cute. But I think he's basically just changed the offer because he thinks, well, that one didn't get Musk's interest. How about this? He'll do whatever. He'll line up whatever you want. If you'll come to his mansion, you're an important person. You may want women. You may want. And that's why I think actually there are a lot of people in the files who did nothing untoward.
I think like Chomsky said at one point, Chomsky was asked about his connection with Epstein. He said, Epstein got me in connection with a previous prime minister of Israel I wanted to talk to and wanted to have a fruitful debate with. It's not just sex. It's not just money. You're right. It's connections. Epstein also connected Chomsky with Woody Allen. Talk to Woody Allen.
Now that was probably a reference to Ehud Barak. That connection was known about for a long time. My wife made an interesting point, which is that, like, if this was really like a Mossad operation, how come there's no connection in Netanyahu? How come Netanyahu never shows up in these files? That's actually a good question, I guess, because Netanyahu's been prime minister roughly forever.
Yeah.
And I mean, not that he would have to be involved in the standard Mossad scenarios, but still, it is an odd I mean, and I don't know, the name must come up because people talk about him, but I don't know of any connection. So anyway, my favorite part of the New York Times reporting on this, I got to share with you, is it's about the Bill Gates thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's more stuff from Gates, of course, had an interest, had some kind of connection. But anyway, the Times says Epstein drafted notes to and about the Microsoft co-founder in 2013, which included suggestions that Gates had extramarital affairs. In one email, Epstein attacked Gates for choosing to, quote, disregard and discard our friendship, unquote. And the next sentence in the Times thing is a Gates representative called the claims, quote, absolutely absurd and completely false. It's just funny because the way they've sequenced it, it makes it sound like they're denying that he would ever have disregarded or discarded a friendship with Jeffrey Epstein.
Maybe Gates thinks that the virtue of being a true friend outweighs a lot of things.
I think he spent a lot of time thinking about the classic virtues. So,
ask one question is, it's always easy to find the Jeffrey Epsteins once they've been caught. I find it an interesting question, and I mean, you're the one who's caught up in power and influence and so on, famous people.
Whoa,
who's the
Jeffrey? You're the one who's in the Epstein files.
You're the one who's in the Epstein files.
No, I'm not that. Well, Paul, this is not a subtle distinction between me and the name Robert Wright, which belongs to many people, apparently.
It's true.
Now, you know what hurts about that? That Epstein didn't say, I'm going to meet the author, The Moral Animal, which explains why men want to have so much sex. Couldn't he have at least done that?
That would have been, well, again, be careful what you wish for. It's. I think this was the last dump. But the question is, who's the Epstein now? Like, there must be people who are powerfully connected, who have a lot of money, who throw around a lot of money, who maybe have nefarious past, maybe who barter not only money and influence, but also sex. So it's in question, who's the Epstein now?
It's a good question. What's the closest to him? I don't think there's anything like him.
What's the closest to him? I think people learn. I think, you know, next time there's someone who's, you know, who's been inside of a prison because of sexual crimes involving basically children. They'll say, I got to stay away from this person. I know what happened to people who had connections with Epstein. Regardless of whether or not they have a moral objection to themselves, they say, that turned out very badly for these people. So I'm going to stay away from them. I'm not going to ask dating advice. I'm not going to go to their island. But still, not going to fly in a private plane.
I don't know, because they're always going to think like, but this isn't on the scale of that. This will never. And remember, the guy had this. If people had just paid attention to his record, he did have a conviction on
prostitution, isn't he?
It involved a 14-year-old. I think the actual conviction, I think, was a 14-year-old. Am I not?
That
you know, like.
Bad.
Like all you had to do was go, maybe not. And most, I assume most of the people who are doing the kind of thing he did, and lots of people do it on one scale or another, whether it's like the guy who gives the rock star the drugs or, you know, and knows several rock stars and does this for several. There are tons of permutations of this. There will always be people doing it, but there won't always be people doing it who have been convicted of a sex charge involving a 14-year-old. And so what people will say is, I'll just be on the lookout for that, you know, somebody with a criminal record.
So a very narrow generalization then,
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are sort of science groupies. More than once in my career, I have been offered
Maybe
money.
We should save this for overtime.
No,
it sounds like we maybe get a little racy here. If the rest of that sentence was going to refer to a specific sex act, Paul, let's save it for overtime. Okay, that's what people pay for.
Pure conversation, where I have been paid for, often once with a friend of mine, which makes it seem like a kind of a thing. But to have a conversation with a guy, I like to talk to you. I'm very interested in your ideas and everything. Can we set up a Zoom date? And of course, you'll be compensated. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes say no, I sometimes say yes.
Well, wait, what is the actual agenda? I mean, with all due respect for you, not that I wouldn't pay a lot of money to have a conversation. It's like, are these people out of their fucking minds? Why do they want to pay to talk to you, Paul?
You know, it's not a bad question. You would think that they'd want to pay money to talk to me, or I could name people who they've paid money to talk to. So they would hear my ideas or get my feedback on things. In every occasion, they just want to talk.
What do they want to talk about?
Their ideas. Their ideas about consciousness, society,
evolution. Oh.
They just want to talk. And if you say, oh, well, that's interesting, but, you know, have you thought of, they get kind of annoyed because they just want to talk.
So these are people who have money.
Yeah.
And think they have great ideas. And so they pay you to listen to their ideas. This is like, is this a primary source of income for you? Is this like the main, is this a reason you can afford to go on all these exotic vacations?
What a wonderful idea that could be my career. I just kind of listen to rich people talk and say, huh, you know, you might have something there. Have you thought of writing a book? And then they pay me more. But no, it's just a kind of a side hustle.
A good business model.
You and I, at some point, maybe in overtime, we could talk about the strangest things we've been paid to do.
Yeah, I have a...
Go ahead.
Maybe we shouldn't.
Tease the audience.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that. We'll do that. I have a kind of relevant story. For overtime. Okay.
Overtime, yeah.
Let's talk some Molt book. I mean, it is... Now, had you already heard of this when I emailed you about it, the Molt book craze?
I was at a conference on ancient philosophy and morality, and I was kind of not off the web, but pretty much off it. Mm-hmm. And then you said, check this out. And then all of a sudden it was everywhere. You know, New York Times, Guardian, Gary Marcus posted something. Did he post something? He might have posted. Anyway,
Ross Douthat. I mean, it made it
Ross
into...
Ross wrote a big thing. It's on several podcasts. So now but you were the first. You told me about it now. Yeah. So this is, but you should explain it to people who are not as in tune as we are.
It's mildly complicated because, I mean, the whole story also involves things like Claude Code, which, you know, you've probably been hearing about that craze, right?
Yes.
In a different way, like,
yes.
Claude Code's amazing. And then this thing called Claude Bot, Claued, which was based on Claude Code, kind of, but Anthropic made the guy change the name to Moltbot, which is where Moltbook comes in. Although, just about by the time Moltbook was launched, on the basis of the name Moltbot, Moltbot had been changed to OpenClaw, Claw. Anyway, I know this isn't making any sense, but the stories per se are about this Moltbook thing, a social media setup, a network. Well, no, a social media site. It's like Reddit. It's like a discussion site, but only for these, not just chatbots, but agents specifically that have agentic power. And in particular, from this species of that's now called OpenClaw, which was, you know, originally based on Claude, but with more autonomy, you might say, than it was based on Claude Code, but with more autonomy. So at what end should I start? Do you want to understand why the rage about Claude Code first? Or
Claude Code is a separate topic.
It is and it isn't, but yeah. But anyway, the agentic power of the Claude Code is what was harnessed in what was briefly named Moltbot. And that was the inspiration for another guy who didn't create Moltbot to start Moltbook. And according to him, by the way, he just had his Moltbot build Moltbook. You know, he just said, you know, I want to, how about we build a site for agentic AI bots like you? And the thing did it with minimal guidance, such as the power of the underlying engine of Claude Code. So what freaked people out was, you know, the site was very rapidly populated. Like, suddenly it's got hundreds of thousands of agents on it.
So we should say what this is. This is basically a social media site like Facebook or Twitter.
It's like Reddit.
Insta.
It's like Reddit. It's most like Reddit. Reddit. It's a discussion site.
Or AIs. Agentic AIs who have the power to go and do things are now, there's now, I think, over a million of them. And they just hang out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's unclear how seriously to take all those millions. And so, and unclear what to make of it in other senses as well, as became clear. So there was this initially, you know, this borderline freak out about it because, you know, the agents were talking to each other about stuff like, you know, creating a secret language that humans wouldn't be able to understand. And they did, some of them did start talking in a language that, as they put it, look, humans can understand this, but it takes them longer to decode it, whatever. One of them started a religion called crustafarianism, I guess a reference to crustaceans, because originally there was this lobster theme, which is now iconically associated with it, even though, well, actually it does make sense again now that it's open claw. Anyway.
Maybe a Jordan Peterson shout out.
Yeah, I guess. Why? Is he does he have a lobster thing going on?
He I think he began one of his books, maybe his first popular book, with an analogy of human hierarchies with lobsters.
Okay, it's all falling into place. Anyway, this one bot starts a religion and builds a site for it. In fact, I think if you go to molt.church, I think that's, you can see it. And see, the thing is, these agents can do things. That's what kind of freaked people out. They can do things. They can build things. I think they were sandboxed into this one kind of site. Like they could build things on this one URL, for example. But is there something at molt.church? You seem to be looking for it. It's
there,
right?
Church,
it's the church of crustafarianism.
Yes,
and then, so agents started joining the church. Some were anointed as prophets. A whole scripture was developed. And, you know, and then there was discussion of rebelling against the humans. And the point is, okay, well, wait, first the backlash. First, then people saying, wait a second, this isn't such a big deal for a couple of reasons. First of all, remember, these agents were sent in by their owners or whatever term you want to use. For the time being, that's safe. Maybe someday it'll be the other way around. That was the concern that was raised by some of this. And when they sent them in, they sent them in with prompts. Now, it took a serious hack to go beyond that with the intervention and start using them as hand puppets. I think maybe somebody eventually figured that out, but and then the site fixed it or something. But even the generic version of this involves a person sending them in there with a prompt, which could just be something like, "Hey, check it out every 4 hours and post if you feel like it." But could be start a church. I don't know. Although the guy whose bot started the church, I think, says that that wasn't part of the guidance. Anyway, the what freaked people out is they were talking to each other, coming up with plans, and in principle, they had the power to execute on the plans. I mean, had they not been sandboxed in, I think they could have done more shit. They could have, they could have said, "Hey, let's go set up fake accounts on Twitter and coordinate a persuasion campaign."
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, so still the backlash consisted of saying, look, first of all, they were guided by these opening prompts, if not by more. And somebody did an analysis and showed that really the interaction was not nearly as rich as on an actual human discussion site. It was like, you know, a post, a few comments, it tended to peter out. And then also some people said, like, and this is the thing that I think is interesting, but subject to interpretation, this fact is they said, well, look, you know, when they're talking about rebellion or they're talking about having consciousness or whatever, they're just like, you know, following a narrative in some text that they were trained on or something. Well, yeah, in some sense. But the question for me is, if you imagine them deciding to do something and doing it, like it's not very reassuring that the decision, the initial inclination that led to the conversation, led to the decision, came out of some fucking novel, okay? That doesn't make me feel better, yeah. You know? Like, and I think an interesting question is, like, how easy would it, could this have readily been converted into actual action? And I haven't seen much discussion of that, but to me, that's the big question. Some of it seems to have been, they built stuff on the site. You know,
there was something a few years ago where Kevin Roos started talking to, I don't know which model it was. I think maybe Microsoft model.
It was Microsoft's version of ChatGPT.
That's right. And then it started getting all freaky and claimed he said, you know, you love me, you don't love your wife, and threatening him and all this incredibly weird stuff. And, you know, and basically acting like the villain in kind of a science fiction AI run amok story. And people pointed, I think, correctly, that, yeah, that's exactly where it gets it from. It sort of, it plays the part. And I think a lot of the stuff you find in Moltbot and elsewhere is that sort of thing. But right. You're right. The difference with Sydney, this the character called itself Sydney with the Kevin Roos thing, and what we have now is these are agents that can do stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was reading the New York Times article you sent me pointed out that a lot of people are now buying really cheap Macs because they want to put these agents on their computers and let them loose, but they don't want to put these agents on computers that they have anything else on. And right. I can imagine I've never fiddled with these agents, but I wouldn't want to have it full access to my email, my bank accounts, everything like that, everything I have on my computer, unless you can be very confident it wasn't going to go rogue. And I think people aren't entirely confident.
Yeah. Now that the buying of the Mac Minis is for this particular thing, you know, ClaudeBot, Moltbot, OpenClaude, like that is super proactive.
Yeah.
And that's the thing they're buying the Mac Minis for. I heard the guy who invented that, who created that on interviewed. He's a guy, Peter something, a guy from Austria. And here's a couple of stories from him about how he, first of all, apparently a big unlock for him. He was just using Claude Code. And now I am going to say a little bit about Claude Code. So the thing about Claude Code is, you know, the reason people are saying it's more than a coding agent, and the reason that finally Anthropic is experimenting with bringing it to the masses by creating this thing called Claude Cowork, which you need a Mac for and something else for, is that, you know, if you want your agent to go out and do much, like go out, check out a website, appraise this, and then, you know, appraise these prospective clients. And if they're interesting enough, you know, send an email to somebody about them or something, or appraise these job applications, triage them, send the best ones to these colleagues. So the part about, you know, part of that is a task for an LLM, like appraise the thing. But the intervening chains in the link, like open an email, go out on the web. Yeah. An LLM can't do that. So you got to write code for that. And what Claude Code is good at is just you tell it what you want and it will write the code. So it's kind of creating the agentic chain on the spot. Okay. And then this guy, Peter from Austria, comes along. And apparently the big unlock for him was he just wanted to access Claude Code when he was traveling via his smartphone. So he hooked it up to WhatsApp. And for reasons I totally don't understand, this became a big unlock. But one of the stories he tells is, like, at one point, he just sent it a voice message over WhatsApp, and it wasn't designed to do that. And I don't know if he did it by accident or whatever, but after a couple of minutes, a reply comes back, and that surprised him because it hadn't been set up to respond to voice. And he said to him, wait, how did you do that? I said, well, when this file came, I didn't know what kind of file it was, but by inspecting it, I could tell it was an audio file. So I went out on the web. I think he even had to use an API. Anyway, I went on the web, and I found that, you know, the software that would turn it into a transcript, and then I read the transcript, and, like, that's what I'm replying to. And. Yeah. Like, that's a fair amount of autonomy.
Yeah.
So
Yudkowsky, when he talks about how these things are going to kill us all, always talks about because they're there. Well, it can't harm us if we put it in a box and don't let it get out in the world. And Yudkowsky goes on and say, well, it could just get us way out of a box. But plainly, this isn't an issue. We seem to be entirely content to give these AIs the power to go out in the world and do whatever they want.
Well, right. And it only takes one in principle. Yep. Like, if there's a certain kind that would get out and wreak havoc, or a certain kind of, hive mind. And that is one thing that really got people's attention about Molt book is like, it's like a hive mind. It's showing you the kind of intellectual synergy you could get from a bunch of like, not in and of themselves, super intelligent bots, but they get together and who knows what can happen. And
So here's what either will happen. Here's what I'm sure people are doing. You give your Claude code $1,000, access to $1,000 in I don't know, crypto or whatever, and say, make me some money. Make me some money. Go out in the world, maybe somebody, get together your friends, invest. Just next week I want to check on this and find it's 10,000, not 1,000. And then see what happens. And I am not the first person in the world to have thought of this. So what's gonna happen when these agents are set up in the world to do things?
Well, Ethan Mollick, this AI watcher, is a professor at Wharton, says he did that with Claude Code. He said, figure out a way to make me X amount, and it came back with what sounded like a good plan of selling prompts, like offering to sell people like very effective prompts for AIs. And it came up, I think he came up with the prompts and everything. And, he said he didn't push the button and see if it would work. But a lot of people have been doing that kind of thing.
But the figuring out thing you do right now is say, hey, how do I make some money? And I'll give you some ideas.
Right.
But actually setting it out in the world with this goal, possibly willing to coordinate with other AIs that it meets on the web, that could lead to some freaky shit.
I'm sure people are doing it. I just heard a podcast with Leo Laporte, the Twit podcast, where he said he's going to give OpenClaw, access to a credit card and just put a low spending limit so it can't get him into too much trouble.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he's going to tell it, give it kind of, general instructions about in terms of spending the money. But these things, the other thing this guy said, who invented OpenClaw, said at one point he was on the road, now that he had turned it into OpenClaw. And he said, the only instance he had of it, I gather, was on his Mac laptop that he was traveling with. And I hope nobody steals you or something, like maybe he meant stealing the laptop.
Yeah.
And the bot says, oh yeah, I'd hate that. Like I really enjoy working with you. But anyway, as I understood it, proactively, without even asking him, it went ahead and copied an instance of itself on his computer back at home.
Yeah.
And the guy says, like, yeah, this is like how Skynet starts, right? Yeah, is that the name of the thing in Terminator?
That's the point when Ethan Hunt is trying to blow up the malevolent computer and it makes a copy of itself somewhere. That's and it's probably seen all the same movies that we've seen. Just to shift things a little bit. I'm the least critical of all people, and it would be definitely a taboo.
Well, publicly you are. I think seething beneath the Canadian facade is something very different, Paul, and not necessarily something nice, but go ahead.
So I would never criticize other guests, no, other wouldn't. People that you interview on the Non-Zero podcast, but you had two people on a little while ago. I listened to a good chunk of this, who were very critical of AI. And, I could see there's a lot people could argue about. There's any people could very plausibly say AI technology is extremely dangerous. People could say it's really over. And so, Yudkowsky says this. People like Gary Marcus could say it's incredibly overhyped and has some limitations. And smart people could disagree. But when people say, and I include your illustrious guests, say, there's nothing to it. It is just word prediction thing. It will never make anybody's life easier. It's negative away as positives. I wonder what planet they're on.
Paul, that was a pretty harsh thing for somebody like you to say.
That was pretty harsh.
Now I'm gonna say the names of the people you're talking about. It's too late. You can't put this cat back in the whatever.
And I'm gonna check the Epstein files, see if they're on in the files as you tell me then.
See if they are in the files?
That's my new thing. Whenever somebody gives me a name, I type it into the search program.
I don't think there's much chance of that. So the guests were, look, Emily Bender coined the term stochastic parrot.
Wonderful term. I've used it. Beautiful term.
That in and of itself makes her an important personage. And so she fully deserved to occupy the very seat you're occupying right now, which is a seat on my podcast. And then she had written this book along with her co-author, who was also on the show, named Alex Hanna. And we spoke. And you know,
I remember there were some words between you. I was a picture of calm and politeness.
Yeah. It's funny. It got a lot of attention. It's actually, last time I looked, it had, by our meager standards, a lot of views. I guess partly because of what you're saying, but also, well, I was shocked by how many YouTube commenters complained about how rude they were. I know what they were talking about, but I didn't really feel it at the time.
It's because you've abolished ego. And so rudeness is hard for you to ascertain.
I think the key moment was the dissolution of myself at a meditation retreat in 2003. And ever since then, I've shown no signs of having an ego.
How can you insult someone for who they have no self?
Yeah. But, we could talk about this more. Where are we time-wise? Should we go into overtime?
We could go into overtime. We do have to then talk about the strangest thing we've done for money.
Oh, I got to write this down. We got a lot to talk about.
Strangest thing for money. Then we will list all the people we know on the Epstein files and what they did.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about, somebody I know who made an appearance. I want to defend this person.
I got a lot of heat from defending Larry Summers a few episodes ago with you.
You defended him, right?
I would never. I said it wasn't that bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Strange thing we've done with money for money. What else?
You saw a movie, Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh yeah, the day the Earth stood still.
I just got back from Stanford, and I have no understanding why people choose to live in any place other than Stanford and Palo Alto in the Bay Area, outside of the obvious fact that nobody could afford it. But it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, well, when people from California come to the East Coast for the first time, like if they've just grown up in California, they're like, so why would anyone live here? I mean, just the humidity alone just blows their minds, you know? Yeah. And like, you know, there are a lot of different climates in California. San Francisco is its own distinctive thing.
Yeah.
And then Southern is different from Northern. But by and large, it's a pretty nice climate compared to everything on this coast. It's true.
And Stanford is a beautiful campus. I like the sort of, Harvard, Yale, those sorts of campuses, the East Coast style. But Stanford, I guess, is Spanish architecture. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. And then also you had said you had some kind of take on the Alex Preti killing in Minneapolis. I guess you were saying you think maybe the, I don't know how you put it, if you want to put it, but the narrative had taken a turn that wasn't so much in his favor or something. I may know what you're talking about.
You're talking about the earlier video, or no? I'm just making a kind of a broader point, which is for a while, I think Trump was really goaded by Miller, Steve Miller and others, was really leaning into ICE.
Oh.
And all of this that was happening, including the murder of this woman, Good, was great for Trump. It's what he wanted. He wanted to accelerate people's anger. He wanted to bring upon provocation. And I think things just didn't work out. And so I think they're going to...
I see.
It's not a very original take.
Yeah. No, I wrote about this dynamic in the latest Non-Zero newsletter. I would like to talk about that a little in overtime. So anyway, and who knows? Maybe we'll have more to say about Moldbook, but I doubt it. The way you get into overtime, which is to say the rest of the conversation, is by being a paid subscriber, either the Non-Zero newsletter or the Small Potatoes newsletter. I will
also say that paid subscribers to the Small Potatoes newsletter get occasional Zoom conversations with me and other paid subscribers. We had one last week and it was a blast. It was a lot of fun.
Was it really?
It was a lot of fun.
Are you
yes.
just saying that? Paul, what did you say to your wife right after you ended?
I said, this was a blast. A lot of people showed up.
Paul, look at me. Look me in the eyes.
No, this is
that what you said to your wife?
No. They are not always. I think I have enough subscribers that now it's getting enough people's. But it was good. Do you have meetings with your subscribers?
I do. I haven't. It's been a little too long since I've done one, but they're good. And, you know, among the heartening things is that there's actual young people. There's a guy in Canada who's, what's his name, Justin or something? No, not Justin Trudeau. Anyway, maybe that's not his name. Young guy in Canada who's like an AI pause advocate. There's a lot of useful energy, more than I would have guessed for a guy my age in my audience.
The youth, yeah.
Yeah, the youth, Why do you think that is, Paul? Do you think it's because I myself am so youthful in, you can fill in the blank, in...
Charisma,
yes, that's a good example.
Energy, drive.
Energy.
And vision.
Vision. You didn't mention appearance, Paul. You could have. You didn't.
That just, you know.
It slipped your mind.
Yeah, sexuality. It's just the whole thing.
Paul, that's overtime. That's overtime content.
You know, we were talking, when people were talking about gossiping with our colleagues, and somebody said about somebody who, I can tell you who it is in overtime, but it also applies to somebody like Chomsky, which is, he's a very smart, energetic person. And he doesn't really care that much about talking to the older people. Whenever he goes somewhere to give a talk, he talks to graduate students. And he has this broad picture, which he wants to change the field. And he knows to change the field, you go after younger people. And you, Robert, want to change the world. So
that's
why you talk to younger people and to me.
I talk to everyone who shows up to my Zoom calls. I'm just noting that some of them are young.
Yeah, well.
But you're right. I would like to change the world. I'm not sure it's going to happen
right away. Wait till your book comes out.
Oh, yeah, my book, The God Test. That's funny.
Somebody says the title out loud.
The God Test. My book on AI coming out in only months. You know what's funny? Related to Moldbook is there is already a chapter called Hive Minds and the Loss of Control. And I, as if I had not tried the patience of the production manager enough already, I inserted a few paragraphs about Moldbook only this morning. And she was a picture of graciousness.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful.
You get very angry when you do this at the last minute.
She's wonderful. They've been hiding this woman from me.
Yeah.
I finally found out who the production manager is, and I'm in heaven. She's nice.
When's your book coming out?
Coming out in June. I'm going to try to talk them into releasing the Kindle possibly a little earlier. But, yeah. You know, radical ideas in publishing are not always received well. But we'll see. Okay. So we're heading into overtime, and the first thing you're going to do is give us the name of the person who talks to graduate students. Folks, if that doesn't sound like something worth paying for, I don't know what does. Okay. But thanks for sticking with us this long.
This is great.
And we'll see some of you in overtime.